Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world running on EVs and renewable energy? Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Happy if you're dealing in a world online, and I've definitely coached long enough that I don't deal in that world. Only online I look at is usually movie stuff and rap battles and funny things that animals do.
Now back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Beavis Butthead and Kyle Shanahan.
That was classic.
If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Willard and Dibs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you find your favorite podcast. Just really quick, just to get back to what it is he was talking about in that press conference, I'll finish my thoughts and I want to hear from you guys. It's Jake Hutchinson, it's Lorenzo Neal, it's Dan Abone, filling in for Willard and Dibs. But Christian McCaffrey, make no mistake about it, if he's healthy, he's going to go. And if he's going to be your number one, then Jordan Mason, as good as he was, and he was better than adequate, is going to be relegated to a number two role. And as a number two, you're going to play sparingly. You're going to play as much as you've played in the last couple of weeks. And Isaac Garendo, you're now number three in the pecking order. When it comes to Christian McCaffrey, and all I hear is that he's not the same guy. I got to be honest with you, Lorenzo, as well as you, Jake. I'd love to sit here and say, because I often put myself on, you know, Dan Devone's Island of One, but I don't see that. What I see is, where the hell do you want him to go? I don't, Lorenzo, you correct me if I'm wrong, because you played the position. You played the game. Usually, if I'm watching a running back or anybody on a football field, I can usually, after my fat ass has been sitting on the couch watching football for all these decades, I can say, you know what, dude, you just missed the window, or you can't get to the second level. You can't turn the corner. I can see that. I don't necessarily have to be on the sidelines. Christian McCaffrey, to me, is like, bro, there is nothing. That zone read, either teams have closed that gap, which I want to talk about, which I think has a lot to do with where the 49ers are at in terms of their struggles. But there's just nowhere for him to go. This idea that he's lost a half step, that he doesn't have the ability to beat Christian McCaffrey, there might be an element of truth to that. But I'm with Kyle Shanahan. What it is that I see, there's like three dudes waiting for him in the gap. In terms of where it is that people want him to go, Jordan Mason sure as hell isn't running over those four guys. And I think a lot of this is just simply, much like that of Deebo Samuel, and people are saying that he's washed. I know that that's trending and seems to be really popular. Is he as effective as he was a couple of years back? Probably not. But what Kyle Shanahan is able to do, as it relates to Christian McCaffrey as well, is put Deebo in space. Like, schematically, how many times did you see Deebo and then yak? Like, Deebo on that shallow cross, whatever it is, and then Deebo could run after the catch. There's no windows anymore. And I think a lot of teams have, they figured out the secret sauce as it relates to Kyle Shanahan. But just getting back to Christian McCaffrey, I don't necessarily see what everybody else sees, apparently. That he's slow to half step, that he's not recognizing the ability to get to a second level, or that he's not the same guy.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think Christian McCaffrey, it's nothing to do with him. We've been talking about it for the last couple of days, you know, and Jake and I, we've been on the same page of just there's nowhere to go. When you're running that zone read, your offensive lineman has to create a new line of scrimmage, and your goal is to get the lineman to run laterally, but you push them 1 to 2 yards up the field. So if I pushed him 1 or 2 yards up the field and you have a speedy back like Christian McCaffrey and he's racing to get to a spot like you're alluding to, the stretch play, he's stretching, getting there. So the defense is moving very, very laterally. And if you have the safety of corner, if they come or whatever, now once he puts his foot in the ground and get north and south, there's a lane. But the backside has to become the front side, meaning that when you're running that zone read, your backside guard and tackle, they have to get those guys on the ground. You have to cut them off. So when Christian McCaffrey sprints to a point, when he puts his foot in the ground, he's getting north and south, and now he creates those spaces that you're talking about. But what's happening, the backside's not getting those guys cut off. So when he tries to stop, he has to absolutely stop. And now, like you said, the posse is coming to get him. Since you don't have any penetration, since you don't have that push on the front side, he can't use his speed. He's getting to the tackle spot or to the tight end spot, and he's already stopping. It's usually a stretch. So you usually get those guys running so he has more time to use his speed to push the defense and make them run laterally, and then he can cut. But when he can only take 2 steps, you didn't get the defense to move, and hence everyone's still in the box, and that's why you're seeing 4 and 5 guys hit him and tackle him, and he has nowhere to go. He has not lost a step at all. The only thing that I would say is, you look at Saquon Barkley, look at the way he's running, but number 14, forget his name, that goes in back, he comes in and he backs him up. You look at around the league, look at Derrick Henry, you get Baltimore, they have running backs that back him up, they're getting 5-6 carries a game. Jordan Mason is a guy has earned the right to carry the ball at the bare minimum 5 times a game because he is a different type of runner. He doesn't use his speed to stretch the deep. He's not necessarily a zone stretch. He's not a stretch guy. He's a zone. He's one cut. He's getting downhill. You can let Jordan Mason, he's more physical. He runs through more arm tackles, so he gives you a different dimension. This is not about getting Christian McCaffrey off the field. This is at times using Jordan Mason and Christian McCaffrey at the same time. This is about saying, hey, let's let a guy soften him up because he runs physical and he's more bigger between the tackles. Now, Christian, you can come in and finish these things off. So it's not that you're taking necessarily Christian off the field at all times. You're just saying, here's a guy that right now offensive line can't do what you're asking him to do. So hence, Jake, it makes Christian not look as effective as we know that he can be.
Yeah, I think there's a few things going on. I think number one, it's the offensive line. They're not getting pushed. It's been bad. We've covered that extensively. It starts, I think, center and left guard. They're not doing it. And there's other guys that are missing blocks left and right. I do think the reason you have the discussion about Jordan Mason and Garendo and all that is because, and McCaffrey, after the Seahawks game, admitted it, that he's not quite where he wants to be. And Shanahan, in this press conference, while defending him, I think he also said, you know, he's not at that MVP level. He's not where he should be. And I don't think anyone really expected him to be immediately back to that level. And I'm not quite sure it matters a ton because he's not getting blocked for all that
right,
well.
Right.
But I think where you get the sort of frustration on the fan side is Jordan Mason was one of the best in the NFL this season with mediocre blocking and making something out of nothing. And so bringing him in, you know, occasionally, especially between the 30s or something like that, where you can take a little bit of the load off of McCaffrey and get him in situations where you're closer to the red zone and he doesn't have to go every single down, is something I think that could help him and I think would benefit the 49ers. But again, it's McCaffrey, the fact that he's not an MVP level, that's not, you know, the main problem. The problem is they're not getting any movement up front and that whoever's back there, it's a really tough assignment for him.
I think Kyle Shanahan sees McCaffrey as the reigning offensive MVP and that he's got to get in a rhythm, that you feed him and you continue to feed him so that he becomes Christian McCaffrey by the fourth quarter. He has never shared the load with anybody when it comes to Christian McCaffrey. And I think Kyle Shanahan is trying to revisit that. That when Christian McCaffrey is cleared to play football, he's my go-to. I don't split it with Jordan Mason. I don't split it with anybody. I go with him because I believe in him. In order for him to get to where it is that we're comfortable with or we're accustomed to, he's got to get that lather. And in order for him to do that, he needs the reps. And it may not be popping for 4 or 5 yards an attempt, But eventually he'll be there. But he's riding McCaffrey much like he did the last 2 years. And so if you're the backup, unfortunately, for McCaffrey, or if you're number three in the depth chart, that's where you're going to stay. I could be wrong, but I think he's waiting for McCaffrey to return to being that guy.
Well, he won't see it this year because you don't have the push up front. And that's the difference that we're saying. McCaffrey, I'm not asking McCaffrey to split. I'm just saying give him a bite of the sandwich. Give Jordan Mason a bite. Because if you give him a bite, he is going to create an opportunity for you to even have more success. That's all we're saying. I don't believe Jordan Mason's a better back than by no stretch of imagination. McCaffrey is one of the best, if not the best, passing receiver, even better than Saquon Barkley out of the backfield. Far as being able to run physical and do those things, that's not necessarily McCaffrey's strength. Now, you still see him a run over guys. He can break arm tackles. He can do that. But he's getting hit in the hole. Jordan Mason, in this type of offense where the offensive line is not creating a line of scrimmage, they don't get any stretch on the zone. McCaffrey's a great runner in a zone stretch read because you're sprinting. McCaffrey gets the ball. He's sprinting. They say your aiming point is the wide nine where the tight end's supposed to be. They're supposed to get that, and it's ace block, tackling, ace, you know, tray block, tackle, tight end. That's what tray means, tackle, tight end. They tray up to the backer. So they get the guy on the end, they double team him, and they push up to the backer. So you create a lane. So the tackle, the tight end, knocks the defensive end onto the tackle. They're pushing, and now they scoop up or tray block up to the linebacker, and now McCaffrey with his speed, he's at that angle and at that point right there. So now he has a lane that you're talking about. Put his foot in the ground, get north and south, and that's when McCaffrey becomes absolutely unstoppable. But what you're getting is the guard is letting the guy beat him across the face. The guard's not able to get just cut him off. He's getting penetrated in the backfield, so he's creating a new line of scrimmage. Now McCaffrey's stopping at the B gap instead of the 9 or the C gap, way out wide. It doesn't work, Coach.
I told you, Jake. Write this down. Let's go. All right, we come back. We'll continue to talk about the 49ers. We're sponsored by Safeway. Jake Hutchinson, Lo Neal, Dan Devone. It's halftime.
Real good. I think he's playing very well. I don't think he's had a bunch of clean lanes. I think he had a couple versus, when I say a couple, I actually mean two versus Tampa, and he hits those two, which maybe is just half a step off just with seeing it, but you hit those two, and you know, it'll completely change yards per carry, which will look better from an outside perspective, but it won't change anything and actually what's happening. So to sit here and talk like he's struggling, not going to do that at all, but for us to be disappointed that he's not exactly how he was or just right in MVP form, that'd be unfair to anybody.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Lo Neal, Jake Hutchinson, Dan Avone. Lo dancing as we come into the break. Jake actually giving a head nod.
Yeah, Jake, you know, we're feeling it, man. He got that California know how to party, baby.
Jake Hutchinson, by the way, a Jersey guy, so don't think this kid's just coming light with some, I'm a California guy.
I love Jake, man. Jake's my guy.
Strong Jersey roots here, man.
That's right. That's
so
right.
So Jersey,
bro.
Did you have any Paisan in you, or you just...
Well, not really, but you grew up around enough Italian people that you sort of take on the culture a little bit.
Yeah.
What I miss most is you got the pizza there, and then you got the bagels.
The pie.
Nobody does bagels out here the right way. They need to be the size of a small child.
Or you can't get a bagel in California, and you can't get a pizza slice, Lo. I don't care what you say. There's no one that will duplicate a New York slice. I don't know if it's the water out there or what's going on.
See, I don't like the big, thick pies. I don't like, you know.
No, New York's thin. Chicago's got that thing that's a casserole.
Yeah.
It's a good casserole, but it is a casserole.
You're Boston, New York. It's piss. It's wicked cool. I spent some time up there in the Cape, baby. I was out there for a while in the Big Apple.
When I see you dancing, I'm thinking about you back in your Fresno State days.
Oh, boy, you wasn't ready for the percolator, baby.
Closing down the Black Angus.
Closing the bound Willikers and Black Angus, baby. They call me the percolator, baby. When I start perking, they call me get black, baby. They're percolator. Too much, Jake? Right. Too soon? Too soon?
No, never too much. Okay.
Let's talk about the San Francisco 49ers. And I'm at a loss for words when we're talking about how we got here because – let's just keep where we started things and keep in mind that this is a team that was expected to go to a Super Bowl. It was Super Bowl or bust. And again, as we sit here and try and figure out what's wrong, I can't find anything that you can point a finger at and all of us being sort of on the same page. Here's how I see it, Jake. I think that you're seeing a lot of teams that are doing what it is that the 49ers are doing offensively. And that's what happens, Lo, when you get, you know, when you're doing something effectively, because it's been Kyle Shanahan sort of on the top of that mountain, right? He's been the most innovative coach the last 3 to 5 years in the NFL. Take nothing away from Sean McVay and the Kevin O'Connells of the world, but it's been pretty much Sean McVay and everybody else.
And I got Andy Reid on the phone.
Who's that?
I got Andy Reid on the
phone. Well, Andy Reid's got Mahomes. Andy Reid doesn't need to get innovative. Andy Reid will just say, Mahomes, go win me some games. As Mahomes does when Carolina and everybody else starts to, you know, make their buttocks get a little tight, Mahomes take his home. You know what I mean? You got Mahomes. But when it comes to Kyle Shanahan, and you know this, when you're dominating the league, you get these weird people called DCs, defensive coordinators, who lock themselves in a room for 14 hours a day and don't see the light of day until they figure out what the hell it is that you're doing. And I think they've closed the gap, because now what you're seeing is that more offenses are doing what it is that Kyle Shanahan's doing. And so what does that mean? It means that the defenses now have an idea. When you come out in those formations, I'm not exactly sure.
No, you're right.
I have an idea that there's going to be a tendency as to where it is that you're going with the football.
It's already happening. I think last year, you've seen defensive coordinators start dictating the terms. Offensive scoring has been down. It's been tougher for offenses. And you see, I mean, you just look at the amount of coaches Kyle has lost. A lot of those guys, you got McDaniel, you got Bobby Slowick calling plays. You know, Robert Saleh had Mike LaFleur for a while. There's a lot of that tree and other guys that came from Sean McVay that are all running sort of similar things, and defenses have looked at how to attack it. And I think for the 49ers, they've had a real, real problem. Teams have stacked the box against them, and they've run tight man coverage, and the 49ers receivers haven't been able to beat it. And then when they get into third and medium, third and longs, they bring pressure off of one side, they overload it, and then Brock Purdy has to throw hot, which is usually a short throw, and he's under pressure immediately because the 49ers either don't have the right protection or they just don't have enough guys. And so teams have figured that out, and the 49ers have not had answers for that all season long. And then on the basic stuff, they just haven't executed well enough.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that any time a team brings a hot, you have a side adjustment that the receiver can do. I don't think necessarily you can stop it. Tom Brady was one of the best at that. If you blitzed him, you were in trouble. He was going to carve you up if you came after him, because there's holes and there's weaknesses in the defense. You have to have a receiver that's able to beat man coverage and do the things you need to do, especially in hot reads. Wes Walker game wasn't a 4-6, 4-7 guy, played with me the Chargers. Here's a guy that you ran up to an option route. Boom, boom. He'd beat you. You saw the way they were able to do it. They were just on the same page. When teams start to evolve and understand what you're doing, you can't be right when your team play you man and it's option route, it's read. You can't be right as a defender, because if you take away the outside, he's going to go inside. If you take away the inside, he's going to go outside. So you have to have a receiver that and receivers that can help you beat coverage, especially when they're bringing some heat. And you got to beat them on. You got to beat them with the ball, and you got to be on the same page. The Niners aren't on the same page. They're not on the same page, and they can't win right now in the trenches. Bottom line, offensive and defensive, you're losing in the trenches. Gave up 150, 160 yards the other day. One back out of 100. That you watched them against Arizona. Arizona, you're up by 2 points. Arizona took the ball in the fourth quarter with 3 minutes left. You're winning by two, and they ran down their throat. The Rams had missed tag offensive line. Guys were out. Both your receivers were out, and you lost that game. Kyle Shanahan said, there's three games. Listen at that clip. He cut it up. And I was like, listen. And I said, what am I going to pull away from this? Out of everything, I know he talked about he doesn't watch social media, and the only thing he's doing that for the movies. I took out of there. He said, there's three games. Three games we should have won. Three games we felt that we lost that we should have won. And I tell you what those games are. Seattle, can I get a ding-ding? I wish my man was back to work. Give me a ding for Seattle. Can I get a bell for Seattle? Boom. And then you talk about the Rams.
Yep.
He said the Rams. I guarantee it was the Rams, because they played with four offensive line guys that are on the street and without two receivers, both starting receivers, and they lost. Can I get a yep too on that one? And then the last one would be Arizona.
So you have blown and produced
those three games. Yep. That's what he's the hell yeah. There we go. Can I get a yep? Yep. Those are the three games. You know that he's talking about.
No
talk
question.
To me, Daddy.
No,
talk
no,
to me.
No question. And I think that's something where you can point to three plays. They said it, and I think the 49ers said it before this last week, is, you know, they were three plays away from beat 8-2. Well, you didn't execute on those three plays so you're not 8-2. And also, to even have it get to the point where those three plays decide the game, it means you didn't execute in a number of other ways. And also, this is your identity. You keep doing the same thing over and over, and you let teams get back into the game, and you don't, you know, stomp on them and just finish. That's who you are. I'm sorry. You can be that close, but you don't finish. I don't care. Like, you got to get the job done. They have not done it.
Those three games, you know that. You see, they didn't win those three games and those three teams.
Dude, I know nothing except what you tell me. I write down everything that comes out of your mouth, man. You're the gospel. All right. We'll open up the phone lines at 888-957-9570. We'll start it with Larry in Lafayette, wants to go after the head coach of the Niners. What's up, Larry?
Well, I was just really disappointed after the game, the first game of the year. When Jordan Mason had his career game, he was really pumped up. They took him on an on-the-field interview, and he accidentally told people that Shanahan knew on Friday night that that McCaffrey was out. And then you see his post-game interview inside the building, and he has dead eyes. Somebody tore into him for letting that information out just because the 49ers were playing with the injury report. That kind of thing is indicative of someone who doesn't give a damn about his players. And I just think it's kind of sad because he just doesn't seem to be an excellent leader of men. He's a great football mind. Can't deny that. I just think he has something lacking to get him over that last hump.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. I have to disagree on that. He doesn't care about the players. I think one of the things that players really value about Kyle Shanahan is that he is straight up with them and that he's not a coach that tends to just scream and yell just for the sake of it. He is a modern head coach who explains things, explains what he's looking for. I think Jordan Mason is a guy who wears his emotions on his sleeve in that sense, and he also knew he screwed up. And then the media, you know, put out there that, you know, McCaffrey was out, and it's such a big deal because of betting and who McCaffrey is and what that all means and all the stuff that could happen, and he knows he wasn't supposed to say it. I think that's where that was coming from. I can take other criticisms of Kyle Shanahan. There's many things that I think he has flaws with, but in terms of caring about his players and players buying in, I don't think that's a fair critique.
Yeah, he doesn't sell his guys out. Kyle Shanahan loves these guys. Actually, I'm not going to say he loves them too much. I think that he'll cave and give guys money, which they maybe shouldn't give them money, because he wants to show that, hey, we're different. We're an organization that's going to take care of our players. Hey, even if your better years behind you, if you're one of the guys, we're going to take care. And sometimes coaches hold on to guys too long. Sometimes coaches don't hold on to guys long enough. It's hard to say goodbye. Look at Tom Brady, what happened in New England. Belichick turned the page. And it was tough. And Tom went on to win another Super Bowl and probably could have won another one, had a chance to win two of them in Tampa Bay. So sometimes coaches just say, I have to do what I need to do in order for the good of the organization. And it's tough because I don't blame the players for getting their cake and getting their chicken and getting their money while they can, because it happens. And I think right now you're in a situation where John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, they want this team and these guys to know, we're going to treat you like family. We're not going to disrespect you. And I don't think that you could, it's not disrespect if you say, look, I love you as a player. I love what you brought to the table, but we're going to turn the page because it doesn't fit. We can't make this work with the money that you want. It just doesn't work. Not that we don't think you deserve it. Not that we don't think that you're good enough to get it on the market, but we can't do it because it goes against us as a collective group, that it would hurt the good of the team. And I think that's what you're getting ready to experience from the 49ers.
I do think that they have a philosophy about rewarding their top guys. And they've made that clear, that if you are a top guy for us, we will take the time and we will pay you and we will make it as painful as possible. And we will drag it out deep into the offseason, which benefits nobody. But they will take their time and they will eventually get a top of market deal done. And that's what happened with Brandon Ayuk. Ayuk didn't handle it well. They didn't handle it well. But that was a situation where I think because of that philosophy of them viewing Ayuk as a top guy, which I agree with, I think he is, and last year was a top 10 receiver, and he was starting to round into form. But because they paid him, now they're in a situation where they paid him, they paid Debo, they paid other guys in free agency, and now you get into a situation where money gets tight and you're probably going to have to pay your quarterback something like $60 million if you want to extend him. And that's what happens when sometimes maybe you should say, all right, play on your fifth-year option, we're done negotiating, or we'll trade him.
Do you think he's going to get $60 on the market?
If they're going to repay him, yes. That's the going rate. But again, and we could talk about this, I think that you have to consider, I'm not necessarily saying do this, but what's wrong with saying, you know what, let me just see another year. Before I give you $60 million per and tie myself, you know, hitch my wagon to you, how about just another year before I'm completely confident and arrive at that decision? I know there's a lot that we can, you know, and we'll get into that. One more thing, we'll just put a bow on Kyle Shanahan. But Kyle Shanahan, everybody, this gets thrown around casually, like the player's coach. I think that's exactly what he is. And that's not something that you can try to be. It's just either you garner that respect or you don't.
Right.
And I think he gets that X factor. And the fact that he chewed Jordan Mason's ass, that was one of my favorite moments. Because you can clearly see that Mason afterwards was like a kid. The caller's spot on. He's not right about, you know, Kyle Shanahan, but he was spot on about Jordan Mason looked like a guy that dad just said, bent him over and said, don't ever do that again. And that's one thing about Kyle Shanahan that I think maybe he gets from his old man. He's got a little old school in him.
Yeah, he's prickly. He gets grumpy, and he lets you know.
And as much as he's a player's coach, I think that when you screw up, he's not afraid to get in your grill. And I think that that's, you know, that's an interesting balance that you don't see a lot of today's coaches, because they either don't want to alienate today's stars or they're just simply afraid. There's two things I wanted to ask you. Your best and worst coach, if you even want to go there.
Yeah, it's so interesting because that's a great question. I have some great coaches. I mean, there was a coach that I think that the way that he philosophized and the things that he did, there was a book that I read, Just Lead for God's Sakes, and it was one, there was a bag full of money and there's a hatchet. And I can tell you, go do this and I'm going to give you this, get money. You go make up your bed, money. Go do this and get money. Or you can use lead with the hatchet. If you don't do this, I'm going to whoop. If you don't do this, you're getting the hatchet. If you don't get this, this is the this is what's happening, that fear factor. These both work temporarily, but not permanently. If you can't get the mind and the heart to buy in, the hatchet money and the hatchet and the bag of money doesn't work. And so some coaches coach with the hatchet and money. If you do this, attaboy. Boom, boom. Those two things don't work. You got to be able to get the heart and the mind if you want total buy-in in anything you do. Tony Dungy was the guy who didn't use the hatchet or the money or the bag of money. It was trying to get you. He wasn't going to cuss you. Wasn't going to yell at you. Wasn't going to do it. He's going to treat you like a man. But if you didn't do what's right, you wouldn't be there the following year, or you wouldn't be there. So that's one. Bill Parcells was that guy hucking and bucking, be in your face, and you know, and tough and get on you. And some guys can respond to that, and some guys don't work well to that. Had another guy that was, you know, Jim Mora, just in your face, bully dude, and just aggressive, and just, but the sweetest man, if you know him, he's a great. So you just have to know the guys you deal with and have to understand as a coach who are the players, because all those methods can work. The hatchet and the money, but it only works temporarily, and you don't. It's not sustainable. So I just think that I've had, you know, Dick LeBeau, unbelievable coach, just too nice, unbelievable coach. He was in his 80s, you know, defensive coordinator, an unbelievable guy. But it was in Cincinnati as a head coach, wasn't, because guys took advantage of his kindness. So I've had a lot of great coaches. Marty Schottenheimer, unbelievable, tough, physical, but man had a heart of gold. So there's a bunch of coaches in different styles, but it's the individual. It's predicated on the individual, that coach. If he wants to lead, how does he tend to lead? And he has to know the guys who he's dealing with to have success.
Were you on that Mora team when he was talking about playoffs?
That was in Indianapolis. I was with him in New Orleans.
Oh, I thought that was from New Orleans.
Yeah, New Orleans. That's when he just quit on the team, walked out on the meeting and said, I'm done.
What was that day like?
Hell, like, well, your head coach just, and then we had Rick Ventura was the interim coach. You're talking about on Monday, you come in after a game, You have no, you come into a team meeting. So the first thing you do on Monday is you come in as a team meeting. Everyone comes into me, and your head coach comes up there and just starts talking about the game and they say, guys, I'm just going to tell you, you know what? It's tough. It's tough to win in this league. It's tough to coach in this league. It's tough. Guys, I'm just going to tell you. Love you, man, but I'm out. And quit. Walks out the back door. And it was like, what the
Where was this?
New Orleans. With the Saints.
Did you think he was doing a bit at first?
We didn't know what to think.
And so who came in?
When the guy said, who's going to be the coach? I stood up and said, I'm going to be the head coach. No, but I guess they already had talked about it. Rick Ventura was to the defensive DC. They just put him in as the interim coach.
You just go right into the install after that?
Yes. He talked to you for a little bit. Guys, he gave us a great speech. Talked about the Vikings, how when they would go to a different place, wherever they would go, they would burn up their ships. They would come to a place and they would burn up their ships saying they're not quitting. They're not giving up. They're saying, we're coming to this land and we're going to conquer. That's what the Vikings do. He said, guess what, man? We're going to burn our ships. We're not going to quit. We're going to turn this thing around. I think the next week we lost 52-0. But anyways, that's what happened.
It's a good speech, though.
Yeah, it's great. It was a great speech. We didn't lose that bad. Yeah. It was a great speech.
But to your point, just to loop around, I think when you talk about the modern head coach, and even when Kyle was talking about modern players, you got Gen Z guys who come up, and especially we talked about a little bit off air, the NIL stuff, and all these different things that are changing really rapidly, and players have a lot more agency in college, and players expect more. And so I think some of that old school stuff doesn't really work as well. And so a coach like, you know, Mike McDaniel, who's a laid-back guy, he's got a funky, you know, sarcastic disposition, that wouldn't have worked, you know, 15 years ago as a head coach. He wouldn't have even been considered. But because he's so honest and direct and he's a teacher who says, if you block, this is what will happen, and shows the tape of it, and players understand, you get that buy-in, and it's the thing you're talking about. It's the heart and the mind.
Yeah, and that's why you look at Detroit. You had Dan.
Who thought that was going to work?
But look at him. He's a guy.
I know, man. But that press conference, come on, man.
Oh, yeah. But he's tough, and the guys believe.
Dan Campbell is what we're talking about.
Yeah, because he's in guys' face, but they know that he loves them. See, you got to realize, when your mom tells you, back in the day growing up, because I know you was bad, and your mom would tell you, hey, get over here. And she'd tell you, hey, can I go? He'd say, ask your dad. You know how it is. And we're like, God, do I want to ask my dad? Think about how guys are with moms. Well, not that we don't love them, not that we don't respect them, but you have to fear also. You have to have a little bit of fear. And that's what the difference is with dad. You go ask dad. You can go spend the night, but go ask dad. I was like, man, I'm not even. And sometimes I wouldn't even ask my dad because I knew his answer would be, or can I go somewhere? No, because you knew dad. So if you just have someone at times that just like, hey, look, they're going to let you get away with it, guys will push. Guys will continue to push. Sometimes you got to have that balance. I understand Gen Z, but you got to still have that balance. And I think Dan Campbell does a great job of that balance. He push, but he still respects. He still loves, but he's still hard. And you got to be able to do that because we are athletes, man. We're different. We're built different. We're tough. We want, you know, and we'll take advantage of certain situations. So you do have to have some type of control because if you don't, it's very easy to lose an NFL team.
You
got to
have that respect.
Yes.
And that's sort of the operative word here because respect isn't something that you just go out and get or want to have.
It's earned.
It's one of those things that you either, you know, it's either there or it's not. I think McDaniel, to your point, Jake, is, to me, he tries a little too hard. Like he's trying to be Gen Y or he's trying to be, you know, in vogue with today's players. And to me, it's a little obvious. And I think Kyle Shanahan, you just got to be who you are at the end of the day.
I think that is who McDaniel is. There's just no one else that's like him is the thing. So, I mean, I only say that as somebody who talked to him in press conferences. Yeah. And you're like, oh, no, you think he's just
quirky.
Doing a bit. And I think Odell Beckham was like, what is wrong with this guy? The first couple weeks he was with him. And then you realize, oh, that's who he is. But it does come off weird, especially if you're unfamiliar with it.
Got to have a great assistant coaches. Guys that are going to be that way. Those coaches better make sure that they hire great assistant coaches to manage. Because some coaches, I think that one coach you probably would know, and I think unbelievable offensive mind, one of the best, is North Turner. North Turner was not a leader of men. He was one of the worst head coaches because he had no backbone, because he wouldn't hold guys accountable, because that's who North Turner is. Not that he doesn't want to, but that's why North could never, ever win as a head coach, because he didn't have that bravado in that way to be a head coach. Wasn't a leader of men, but he was a hell of an offensive coordinator. Knows X's and O's better than probably a lot of coaches.
Yeah.
God, he had some good teams.
Yes!
My goodness. Never got to that Super Bowl, though.
That part.
All right. We're going to continue here. Luke, do we want to play a little Kyle Shanahan going out? All right, we'll come back with a little Kyle Shanahan. Tell me, am I reading Warriors Wednesday to go to the break?
Oh, okay. I love this.
Warrior, come on, man. We forget
the best.
Yours. Hey, just give me a bell or a yes. For the... Thank you.
Thank you.
It's 20 minutes too late, but we're good.
Yes, give us the bell.
Give me another bell on this read. Warriors Wednesday is brought to you by Freeman's Appliance. Come see their full selection of in-stock luxury appliances and live working vignettes. Visit Freed Appliances in Pleasant Hill today. We'll be back. Lorenzo Neal. It's Jay Cutchins and it's Dan Abona, 95.7 The Game.
That's up to you guys to grade me. You know, I work as hard as I can to get a win that week, and we haven't won as much as I believe we should have. We've lost three games that I feel we were capable of winning and should have won. Those are the ones that are the toughest. In terms of grading myself, I'm not going to grade myself. I'm going to work as hard as I can, and I'm the same guy I am right now that I've always been. We got to overcome some things that we're in right now, and I believe we can overcome them, but we put ourselves in a tough bind, and that's why we got to be extremely good and successful here going forward to be able to overcome that stuff.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Oh, what grade you all right?
Hard.
Lorenzo Neal, Jay Hutchinson, and Dan Devone coming up on 4 o'clock here on 95.7 The Game as we get you ready for the San Francisco 49ers and the Buffalo Bills coming up on what ought to be snow out in Buffalo, the armpit of the Northeast. Actually, no, I say that to a buddy of mine who's from Buffalo. A buddy of mine who's from Buffalo. Every time I say that, he literally wants to show hands, man. He wants to go. I'm just joking. Buffalo's a beautiful place.
Fans are unbelievable there.
No,
really, really amazing. I used to love playing there because the fans start rocking. You're just like, wow, this little beat-up stadium is just...
It's like a college town, basically.
It really
it's
is.
Got like it's a little like Green Bay, where you got that cold, unique vibe. The weather's tough. Everybody, that's pretty much, they're inside all year. Oh. Everyone's wearing a sweatshirt for 7 months of the year. This is all they have.
Yep.
It's a beautiful thing.
All right. Well, I take it back.
He's like, oh, I'm sorry about that, guys. Oh, we didn't mean it like that. It's all right. You can talk about Green Bay all you want.
Come on, man. I grew up in San Francisco, spent time in Hawaii. I'm a little jaded. I go to a place like Buffalo. I'm like, get me the hell out of here.
Yeah, but that's the point. That's why it's so special. You know, it's not an attraction. They've got the football team, and you hang out, and you're
cold.
It's
a religion, man. I hear you. It is everything, and I can respect that. You know, we talk about Kyle Shanahan. I get it. You know, when a team, if fans want to do this, it's your prerogative, man. We're here for you. We're the vehicle. You want to call and vent, knives out, baby. Go after Kyle Shanahan. You want Debo out, fire everybody for crying out loud. But if you want to have serious conversations about moving off from Kyle Shanahan.
We're your therapist here today.
Please tell me, no one in this room is willing to say Kyle Shanahan needs to go or the proverbial hot seat. Lo, you're looking at me like you might go in that direction.
Oh, my goodness. My deal is like people are talking about him not being in the help, you know, Kyle Shanahan getting fired or put him in the hot seat. Okay, he's been to 2 Super Bowls, 4 or 5 NFC championship games, been to the playoffs, and you would fire him. And for who? For what? So I understand people are like disappointed. There's only been, I think, one other team that's probably done what he's done in the last 5 years, and that's Kansas City because they've beaten them.
Yeah, and that's the thing is I feel like most of the time when you get into that discussion about, okay, fire this guy, you go, who do you want to replace him? You go, well, there's coaches out there. It's like you need to have a very,
names, right?
Very, very good answer. And unless it's, you know, Ben Johnson, who's an unproven head coach, and all of these players have bought into Kyle, it's fundamentally not going to happen. And I also think something that people don't understand or maybe just don't know is Jed York is deeply scarred from how he handled Jim Harbaugh and the whole Jim Tom Sula era, all of that.
We'll run a little bit.
He loves Kyle Shanahan. They are close. Like, they have good dialogues. It would take a lot for Jed York to move on from him, and I think Kyle, for him to be on the hot seat, it has to be this season. It would have to be this season go sideways, and then another season go sideways, and then a third. They don't live up to expectations. Then you can have a discussion. But Jed York is going to need to see a lot of bad performances with really good rosters to move on from Kyle Shanahan.
If Kyle Shanahan would have won only 8 games this year, and next year come back and win 10 games, and the following year win 8, he still wouldn't be fired. Mike Tomlin's been with the Steelers. Look how many long he's been with that organization. They won a Super Bowl. They've been in one, and he hasn't been to as many as Kyle Shanahan has done. So you look at it, but they're not thinking about it because he's good. Look at Jim Harbaugh, John Harbaugh, when you look at the Baltimore Ravens. Been there for 17 years. Yeah, he's won one Super Bowl. He's been to some AFC championships. But if you look at his body of work, what Kyle Shanahan has done, it's absurd that we say fire him. This guy has put together a good roster. He's got a good franchise. And I think he's helped Jed York. Jed York used to be young and inexperienced, fly out the handle, didn't know how to handle, didn't have the gravitas.
Send out tweets, just criticizing,
wanting to be the man, wanting to be the front dog, wanting everyone would stay here because I'm the owner. He had that ownership that he shouldn't have, and just been like, sit back, let me watch with the owners. But he was young. Look at how mature Jed York has gotten, and he understands. Kyle Shanahan is a good coach that's in a situation that he's going to have to make some tough decisions, fire some coaches, fire maybe your DC, your special teams has been a sieve. There's a lot of things that this team is going to have to do to be able to compete again if they want to compete right away.
If Shanahan was fired, there'd be literally, I think, 30 teams that would take that resume and kick the tires on him.
Of course.
I mean, that's the most ridiculous. We're not going to give that any sort of legs because
at all.
That's ridiculous.
Surprise you gave me side eye. This is because you talk so great about San Fran, and now all of a sudden you want to move to the NYC.
San Francisco.
To get to the... You know,
don't ever abbreviate it.
Oh, my God. See, don't ever be... I'm throwing you under the bus right now. I'm going to throw you under the bus.
No, it's called stink eye. I was giving you the stink eye, man. I wasn't sure
you
were going with that.
You.
But
you're
you know
best.
What? Here's... With Kyle Shanahan, though, I do think Nick Sorensen... I think... You know, knowing Shanahan a little bit, I think he may have sealed his fate with the 12 man on the field and successful plays. When Kyle Shanahan saw that there were 12 men on the field for the second, which I've never seen before in a football game,
I don't think a lot of people have seen that.
12 men on the football field. Now, the first time they were shuttling guys in and out because obviously, you know, Green Bay was trying to, you know, quick play, if you will, or trying to catch the 49ers off guard. But I think Sorensen may have just sealed his fate because he's been sort of on the ropes to begin with. But I think that might have been sort of like the backbreaker. Just like when Jimmy Garoppolo overthrew Emmanuel Sanders, I think that relationship after the Super Bowl was severed for life. And I think this one, Kyle Shanahan's like, look at me, I'm not going to do it now, but I sure as hell am going to do it at the end of the season.
No question. By the way, I just had a flashback. I was down there in Miami. I was at the end zone. I was sitting in the stands watching from that end zone, and you watch it, and everyone, you know, and usually with a deep ball like that, everyone's holding their breath waiting to see, and it was just so obviously not going to be complete. You just triggered that.
Could you tell Sanders had that step and that if you put
oh,
him on?
Oh, yeah, he was there, and you could see him go. Sanders knew that the ball wasn't even close. It was brutal. But sorry to trigger every 49ers fan right. Who's now remembering that Super Bowl. But on the Nick Sorensen front, I do think as a young defensive coordinator, there's a lot of intriguing young defensive coordinators out there. I think Sorensen's in a tricky position of 49ers have some young guys, some new guys that don't know the scheme, and Kyle probably doesn't want him to experiment that much. But if you are going to be limited and you're going to run a pretty straightforward defense, you're not going to blitz a ton, you got to make sure in key moments your defense is ready. And to have that, where Kyle didn't pull any punches and he went, that's on us, on the second one, I'm not sure, you know, unless the defense comes back and they just look tremendous down the stretch, that's a pretty tough thing to overcome when you have not really made a compelling case for yourself.
You know what I like about Kyle Shanahan and that all, and like just like the caller when he said, hey, Shanahan's about himself, he's not about his players, shows that he's about his players and his coaches. Because he just said that's on us. He could have threw Swanson under the bus. He could have been like throwing all the coaches under the bus and being like, and he probably in that meeting the next day, trust me, guys, he probably had some choice words for his defense, his DC and his freaking defensive coaches. And the guy that's upstairs is saying, you're in charge of personnel to tell him to match personnel when guys come on the field offensively. The defense has someone that's matching personnel, so they tell the coach what it is. Coach just yells 12 personnel, so you're 12 personnel defense. Go out there. 22 personnel, that means two backs. Two tailbacks, that means 22 personnel go out there. If it's 21 personnel, you know what? The 21 personnel, jumbo, do you have someone up there that matches the defense on both sides of the ball? Offense have someone to match it. So when you don't get that right, that is on coaches, and I think Cal did a great job, though it did not call out anyone. He went more on what happened, what Green Bay was trying to do. It should have been a penalty on Green Bay. Didn't give him time to substitute. So he talked heavily about that. But then that second time, like you just alluded to, that was bad.
You know, you're going to love this because I'm going to talk about the Chargers. Next time we do a show, I want to know the over and under on how many times you give me Charger references. That's your team.
Oh, you know what? I absolutely love the Chargers, man. I mean, it's a place that I played for 5 years. I love it. I think that when you see how an organization, I love the Harbaughs. I mean, the Harbaugh brothers.
I wanted to go because Harbaugh, as we talk about coaches that don't throw players and or maybe privately, but at least publicly are aware that there's a camera on them and don't do that in a public vein, Jim Harbaugh might be the best in terms of blowing up his quarterbacks. He makes those dudes feel so special. You know, and it started with Alex Smith, J.J. McCarthy when he was at Michigan. He lets these guys know, man, you are the greatest thing in the world. And do not worry because you have the utmost confidence because I am never going to pull you. And I know, I mean, think about Alex Smith prior to the arrival of Harbaugh. And he's dealing with all those offensive coordinators, like seven of them, during 7 years. And then he's got Singletary as his head coach. I love Singletary, but what does he know about offenses?
Right.
And along comes Harbaugh, says, you're not going anywhere. You're my guy. And he's done that throughout. And I think Kyle Shanahan maybe isn't, you know, that effusive, but it's along those lines that you have to show faith in your guys, especially when it comes to Harbaugh and his QBs.
Yeah, I think that... Not necessarily Harbaugh. I think Shanahan had a way tougher decision to make than Harbaugh. Because Shanahan had just drafted a guy in Trey that you spent a lot of draft capital to get, and you're willing to trade him away for a guy who's pretty much the last pick of the draft.
It should have been a fireable offense the way that went down. They just lucked into Brock Purdy.
Exactly. So you think about what Shanahan does when you're talking about, does he love his players and he's back, got your back? This guy moved heaven and earth to say, you are my guy, Brock Purdy, and I'm going to stick with you, and that's why I know that they're not going to let this guy leave the building, because Shanahan has committed to Brock Purdy.
I'm with you. And just, by the way, on the Jim Harbaugh front, for anyone who has not followed and just seen how incredible